Really?
Blog Talk Radio.
For the first time in human history, for the first time in all of human history, almost all of mankind is politically awake. And these new and old major powers face still yet another novel reality, in some respects unprecedented. And it is that while the lethality of their power is greater than ever, their capacity to impose control over the politically awakened masses of the world is at a historical low. I once put it rather pungently, and I was flattered that the British Foreign Secretary repeated this, as follows. Namely, in earlier times, it was easier to control a million people, literally, it was easier to control a million people than physically to kill a million. Today, it is infinitely easier to kill a million people than to control a million people. It is easier to kill than to control.
And you will know us by the trail of death.
Truth of your world government has now been exposed. You are not our queens. You are not our kings. You are not our gods. We do not belong to you. We are not your slaves. We stand as free humans have stood since the beginning of time against the strong men, against the thugs, against the bullies. We will defeat your world government. You will and you are failing now. Your new world order will fall. Humanity will defeat you. The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation. The banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Thomas Jefferson.
We'll be right back. All right, welcome to blogtalkradio.com/truthemergesradio. And then this is the Sonny Thomas Show, and I'm your host, Sonny Thomas. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty here with the network, but I think we got everything rectified, so that's pretty good. So you tuned in to the number one show on Truth Emerges Radio Network, and it doesn't really matter because of the fact that we all are trying to get out the truth here, and this is where truth truly does emerge here on Blog Talk Radio. So I want to say, again, always thanks to my my colleagues on this network, and we always do a really good job, all of us together, to make sure that we bring you just all original content, phenomenal guests, and just overall sense of awareness that we obviously need to hurry up and start doing something now before the crap hits the proverbial fan. That's for sure. So we are definitely here, and we are on top of things. So now we have two really good guests tonight. My first guest will be Kyle Rogers from the Council of Conservative Citizens. He wears many hats and many things. He is a national board member as well as a webmaster of the CFCC.org. And he also is a executive committee member for the GOP there in his county there in South Carolina in Charleston, I do believe. And also he has a very good website if you're looking for some good quality flags and some other interesting natural swag at patrioticflags.com, I do believe. So I don't have all my stuff right from me here. I just came back from a symposium in Columbus, literally dropped the pedal to the metal to get back here on Common Core, which actually had some very good speakers. And actually, a couple of those people I talked to, and hopefully you're going to get on here in the next couple of weeks. Matter of fact, one of them, Dr. Mary Black, is tentatively scheduled already for July 31st. And another lady I heard, she did the last two sessions, Dr. Peg Ludwig, I think her name was. Very powerful speaker. She's on top of the game when it comes to explaining Common Core and the mechanics of how they're lowering their standards and everything else on trying to make it look like they're actually doing something when all they're doing is making them look proficient, which the word proficient really doesn't mean squat because of the fact that the parameters involved overall. So I think it's going to be very interesting in its own right to not only listen to her explanation of what exactly is going on with the Common Core situation, but why more and more people are discovering why Common Core is definitely not the way to go, hence the word common, and it's rotten to the core. And so the key word common would be for communist, because the fact that this is actually based on the Soviet model that Charlotte Thompson Isserby had tried to expose nearly 30 years ago. So I think it's pretty powerful that they're trying to push this thing, calling it a different name, but what it is nationalization of our education system well beyond the Department of Education that Reagan was trying to fight leading up to his election in 1980 and unfortunately did not get rid of during his term. And I think it's because after he was shot, he's basically told, sit down, shut up, or next time we won't miss. So I think that's a bit of an issue. So before I dive into my first guest, just real quick, guests are going to be up on next week's show are going to be very powerful as well. We're going to have Pete Kennedy from farmtoconsumer.org. It's a legal defense fund for organic farmers, dairy farmers, and those that want to do completely all natural and traditional farming methods and foods without all this other crap and this fertilization and everything else and Monsanto madness that's going on. He's going to be on the 9 o'clock hour next week on the 17th, and then just announced today that in the 10 o'clock hour, I will have the one and only attorney Orly Tates, who is one of the main vocal supporters out there trying to do a clarion call to show that Barrister Taro is truly a fraudster and an imposter, and he does not belong in our White House. And it's clearly obvious everything that he stands for is everything the Constitution was designed to prevent. So it's pretty obvious what the hell's going on here. And she's been one of the few major attorneys out there who's put everything on the line to try to show the world that this guy is a complete fraud and a phony. Also, Phil Berg, who's there with ObamaCrimes.com, I do believe, in Philadelphia. He's a major Democrat, and he's been blowing the whistle on this this jokester for the past several years as well. So, but Orley Tates will be our second guest next week in the 10 o'clock hour on the 17th. So, again, this Common Core thing that I went and saw, we had some very powerful speakers, had some very good information. Big John Birch Society presence, I might add. I think it was actually mainly sponsored by the John Birch Society, which is very refreshing in its own right. And Kelly Coles was the MC. And so I think we've done a really good job on trying to put some good people together from different places across the country in Columbus today to try to showcase what Common Core is and try to explain the mechanics of it. So it's pretty powerful stuff. So, but nevertheless, the opening song tonight was Winger, Feeding Frenzy, from their 2009 album Karma, and they're going to be playing in Versailles, Ohio on August 23rd at BMI Racetrack, which is an indoor track. And get more information, want to find out how to get ticket information, you can go to kipwinger.com, click on tour, and the information for that gig will be available. I've actually sent Kip Winger a message, hopefully to interview him here the Thursday before the show, him and Rev Beach as well. And I think that would be a very interesting interview in and of itself, because I've been a fan of the band ever since they first came out. And Kip is actually somewhat awake, I think, on some things, because he stood out with his own website, with his Reverb Nation website, was trying to inform us about SB 510, which is basically the Senate bill in the Congress that was trying to prevent anyone from growing any type of gardens in their own property. Because basically they're saying that the land, even though you're, you may think you own it, you're actually a tenant and that it belongs to the U.S. government. So he's a little bit more awake than he sometimes puts himself on. He's not as forthright as Dave Mustaine, but nevertheless, listen to some of the lyrics on some of their songs, you can tell that he's definitely aware and awake what's going on. But again, talking about feeding frenzies, which is definitely going to lead into Kyle Rogers. Kyle Rogers' big claim to fame is that he was the main and almost the sole voice out there who actually exposed the complete media bias against George Zimmerman during the Trayvon Martin trial. And through his reports and some of his investigations, he was clearly showing how biased the media was in attacking George Zimmerman and just make it look like he was totally guilty, where Kyle conclusively showed that the behavior pattern of Trayvon Martin clearly showed what this kid was coming up to, and he just tangled with the wrong guy. That's all it was. And so it really changed the narrative on what the public I was thinking about during the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case. And I'll bring Kyle on here to kind of explain that a little bit more, because he's very instrumental on COCC.org to show the media bias, especially when it comes to colored and white crime, like I often talk about here on the show. If the media will lie to you about not only the crime itself, the ethnicity of the perpetrators, and try to disguise them as youths or teenagers, like a matter of fact, I have an article here, the Dayton Daily News from 2 days ago, which actually underscores that brilliantly. He brought up in one of his features, find it real quick, and it was pretty powerful because he underscored specifically that, and as soon as I read that, you can clearly see it for what it is, the bias in the newspaper. Here it is, Dayton Daily News, a knockout suspect to be tried as adult, Dayton teen allegedly attacked by two homeless men. 17-year-old Dayton boy has been indicted and will be tried as an adult for allegedly being one of three juveniles who attacked two homeless men in a so-called knockout game. Now, this is where it's pretty obvious. Deontay Howard will be tried in adult criminal court on two counts of robbery, the Montgomery County Prosecutor's Office announced Tuesday. It's clearly obvious by the name. It's a black male. We don't know the ethnicity of the two homeless men. It doesn't clearly say that. But it clearly showed that not only did they attack, but they had full intention of stealing money from them. They stole from the one guy only $3, which was all the victim's money. And then the other victim, he stole $7, which is all that man had, and gave him a pretty good concussion, from my understanding. But Montgomery County Prosecutor Matt Heck, Jr., said the knockout game is no game, and the consequences can be deadly. And if I remember correctly, Kyle, we have at least two fatalities, I think, nationwide that's been documented with this knockout game, correct?
Well, there's a lot more than two.
I've seen two that have been reported, but I'm sure you've probably reported even more.
way more than two. I mean, there's people being killed on a regular basis in these black on white hate crime attacks. As far as the knockout game is just a media euphemism. It's an attempt. It's one of the euphemisms the media uses to downplay it and to cover up what it actually is. And it's something that's actually been going on for decades. And but it's like every city in America right now. And you've got the. Well, it used to be that the hardcore gang members, the black gang members, like the Bloods and the Crips type things, for initiation, you'd have to go out and commit an attack on a white person. And they targeted white college students a lot. And so, like back in the 80s and 90s, you had all over America, white college students would get attacked at random by groups of young black males. Well, now some of these gangs are just shooting people out right now. It's actually much more violent. And then you have even younger black, I mean like 14 and 15-year-olds going out, and it's not even to join a gang. They just go out and attack a random white person for the fun of it because they've been brought up to hate white people, and they know that there's no consequences. They know that the black organizations will defend them no matter what. They know that the media will defend them no matter what. They know that if they're under 18, absolutely nothing ever happens to them.
So they basically get a free pass for violence from start to finish until they're 18.
Right, but
you know, it's almost like murder is the rite of passage, and who's going to send a 13-year-old to the chair, right?
Yeah, but there's white people being murdered in random attacks on pedestrians somewhere in America every week. So it's a hell of a lot more than two people.
Yeah, but I was referring to generally the knockout game scenario that I've looked at so far.
Well, but
at
the
least,
knockout game can be anything. It's only knockout game when a bunch of media outlets refer to it that way. But there's been the knockout game. Let me think. I think the St. Louis media started that. I know there was. It's been a couple of years now. There was a rash of random attacks by a group of young black males, and they were actually calling themselves the Knockout. A group of them were calling themselves the Knockout Gang, the Knockout Gang, and one of the people they attacked was an elderly Asian man who died. They nearly killed a white man. The attack was broken up by the mayor of St. Louis. And what happened was a huge group of blacks had picked a white guy in St. Louis at random. They were beating him. He's horrifically injured. The mayor of St. Louis is driving down the street with a police officer. They pull over and actually break up the attack. And then the prosecutor, who I forget her name, but she's the same woman who actually went on the news in St. Louis and said that she was going to prosecute critics of Barack Obama with criminal libel. And thanks to the Council of Conservative Citizens, she was ridiculed nationally, and then she immediately backtracked and was claiming she never said it. But the Council of Conservative Citizens in St. Louis scored national publicity for her comments. Well, she protected these blacks, even though the mayor of St. Louis was calling for him to be charged with attempted murder and said he would come to the trial and testify. Her office claimed that there wasn't enough evidence to prosecute and set him free. But when they were set free, they cheered and laughed and celebrated in front of the, like, right in the courtroom. And they had to order them to shut up. And then a few days later, they threatened the same guy. He's still injured. The guy's looping down the street in casts, and some of them come up to him and threaten him again. But yeah, that's where the term knockout game first originated, with the St. Louis media. And then the Philadelphia media was calling it something else. I forget now. Starting years ago, the British media was calling it happy slapping. This what has happened? Been going on so long that there's been a whole bunch of different widespread media euphemisms. See, all the media, there was a rash of attacks in New York City, and all of a sudden it finally made national news that white people were being attacked by blacks, and they were acting like it was a brand new trend. But this has been going on for so long that, I mean, they were calling this happy slapping in England like 10 years ago. But they got this, blacks do this in England, they do it in France. I mean, it's going on. African immigrants in Australia are doing it. They just attack white people. It's been going on in America for decades. And it's motivated by racial hatred. The fact that they're brought up to hate white people and blame white people for everything, and they know they're going to get away with it. And it's just the simple fact that all around the world, black people just commit extremely high rates of violent crime.
Well, you've, in one of your reports on your YouTube page, you clearly showed the bias in the media when it comes to colored on white crime, how they purposely
you don't even have to show it anymore, because a lot of major media outlets admit to it. Many years ago, the Los Angeles Times became the first major newspaper to openly admit that they were censoring black crime. Now, you could look at reports before that and see that black crime was being censored. For example, I mean, you could the same newspaper would have two crime stories, and one of the stories, a perpetrator would be described as a white male with a red shirt, and then in the next story it would say a male in a blue shirt. And well, the LA Times admitted to having a policy of doing that, and then later the Chicago Tribune publicly admitted to having the editor of the Chicago Tribune publicly admitted to having a policy of doing that. Several other major newspapers now, the Associated Press publicly in writing has admitted that they censor black crime. The producer of the TV show Cops publicly admitted that he censors black crime on the show, that he said that they throw away 50% of all their footage involving black suspects to skew the show on purpose. So you got all these people that admit it. In fact, many times now I've called media outlets, television stations and newspapers, and they'll tell me point blank over the phone that they do it. You can just call them and ask them, and they'll tell you that they'll do this. Now, the one area of the country, like up in Minneapolis and Wisconsin, now they militantly censor the news. I mean, it's just hardcore, blatant, in-your-face censorship. And then if you call them, they'll be indignant and claim they don't do it. But most of the rest of the country, they'll openly admit it over the phone if you call their newsroom. In fact, the Newark Red Star, it's actually called the Red Ledger, I think. Well, they were just, you could see articles where it was just, they were blatantly censoring black crime. There was there's a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert, and it was full of white people. And as all these white people are walking to their car after the concert, groups of blacks were attacking white people at random for the fun of it, big mob attacks. And the paper censored it. And then I found out that the same thing happened a few years earlier after a Britney Spears concert. So it's probably a regular basis. Anytime there's a big concert that draws a mostly white crowd, white people are being attacked after the concert ends as they're walking back to their car. And the paper's censoring this. And so I call up the Newark Red Star, and the crime reporter not only said that it's the newspaper's policy to censor black crime, he said that it's his job as a reporter to decide what the public should and should not, what information the public should and should not have access to. And this got even deeper because the Newark Police Department is censoring who has access to the police report. So I started noticing that other media outlets that reported on crime in Newark, all the information they had was just copy and pasted from the Newark Red Star articles. The police have a relationship with the paper. They know, because it's a total black-run city, where they know that the Newark paper is going to cover for the blacks, so they only give the police reports to them. Other people in the media go to the police station, and they tell them, oh, you got to file a Freedom of Information request with the state of New Jersey, and then wait 2 months, and we'll decide whether or not you should get a copy of the police report. That's the truth. We tried this out. We had a CFCC member went to the police station and tried to get a copy of a police report, and they refused. Only the Red Star is getting these police reports, and the crime reporter flat out told me point blank that it was his job to decide what the public should and should not get to hear. And he basically said that it would be, you know, dangerous if they accurately reported on crime, and that black people would be horribly stigmatized. And so, and this is a radical left-wing goobery looking white guy, typical left-wing puke type.
Wow. So I'm assuming this has been replicated all across the country, especially since we see that a lot of these newspapers, especially ones that stand up and stand for anything that matters, are being bought up by other major newspapers or other media communications giants. And it's like, especially what was going on with in Texas when they were trying to expose the Trans-Texas Corridor, they would, for the small price it costs to pay for a newspaper and own it, they'll make it back in spades once this travesty of the Trans-Texas Corridor is completed. So that's one way how they stifle dissent. I mean, this is worse than what happened to Woodward and Bernstein back in the early 70s. I mean, it's on a huge scale. This isn't just on one particular thing. This is obviously an agenda. And, of course, any type of reporting that goes on out there, it's designed to like one of the things we're trying to expose this with this Common Core crap is that they're teaching kids about white privilege. I mean, you've got classes in Harvard now are being taught on white privilege. I mean, it's totally a farce to begin with, and I think Jared Taylor from American Renaissance has done a really good argument on what the hell white privilege supposedly is and what it obviously isn't, But what's your take on it, Kyle, so that way we can hear your thoughts?
What about white privilege?
Yeah, I think it's a farce.
Well, white privilege is an explicitly anti-white agenda. It's basically a conspiracy theory that all black people everywhere in the world, all their shortcomings are the fault of white people. It basically says that all whites are oppressors, even if they don't mean to be. I mean, some of this stuff will quite literally say that. It'll say, if you're white, you are oppressing black people, even if you don't know it. And then it says, if you're black, white people are oppressing you, even if you don't know it. And so it's actively formulating race hatred against white people. It is explicitly, I guess you could call it like a religion, because you have to believe it on faith, because there's no evidence for it. It's really like a massive conspiracy theory that all over the world, all black people are being oppressed by white people. And that even white people who don't mean to oppress blacks have been tricked into oppressing them somehow.
Well, you know, it's interesting how they try to blame white people for all their follies. I mean, it's actually been white people who actually ended slavery in England, and then it was white people who ended slavery here in America, and then now we've got slavery in different
two
forms.
Of the
I mean, it's
countries
not...
in Africa. Were literally started, one by Americans and one by British, started by white philanthropists for expatriated free slaves. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
pretty much unprecedented interracial generosity in the history of the world. The entire history of the world, even going all the way back when, like, the Denisovians and the Neanderthals were still around, the entire history of hominids is wiping out rival groups of hominids, and then all of a sudden you have in this modern age you have altruistic white people who are building places to live for other racial groups and emancipating other racial groups. And even to this day, you have rich white people going to Africa to purchase black slaves for the purpose of liberating them. And all across Africa, a white face is a symbol of hope and salvation. I was watching a documentary recently, and this guy's being led to this mine in the Congo where some militia has enslaved some local villagers and is making them dig for rare earth magnets or something. And they see one white person, and the slave masters throw off hide their guns and their military uniforms, and the slaves all start cheering for the white guy, because they know one white guy means that they're about to be, that more white people are coming and they're going to be liberated.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that the first slaveholder in America was a black man.
Yeah, that's right. He actually sued in court for the right to hold another black person as a chattel slave. Before that, chattel slavery was completely illegal. It was practiced in Africa and all throughout the Muslim world. Even if the person was purchased, well, they were all purchased as chattel slaves from Muslims primarily, sometimes Sephardic Jews and whatnot, but they were purchased as chattel slaves. But then once they were brought to America, they had to be treated as indentured servants. They couldn't be held indefinitely. And some of these indentured, black indentured servants would then go on and start a farm and buy black indentured servants themselves. And one of them went to court and won the right. The court actually ruled that a black person could hold another black person as a chattel slave. Then later on what happened, people started getting nervous because there was too many free black men running around. And so they wanted to start, this is in Virginia Colony, they wanted a expatriation program to take some of them back to Africa. And essentially what happened is free blacks started selling themselves back into indentured servitude to avoid having to go back to Africa, because going back to Africa was seen as being so heinous, that being an indentured servant in America was so much superior to being a free man in Africa. And so that led to Virginia Colony just declaring that whites and blacks could then hold blacks as chattel slaves. And there was actually, I think Virginia Colony and Georgia Colony both tried to ban the future importation of slaves, but what was going on is the slave trading companies had given stock to the King of England, which is historically a major purpose of having a publicly traded company, is so you can bribe the rulers. You would give the king or whatever free stock, so then he'd protect you. And so the King of England overruled the colonies and forced them to allow the continued importation of black slaves.
Wow. So some of the work you've done for CFCC, I mean, like I said, you've actually, you changed almost the public narrative almost single-handedly, Kyle, when it came to the George Zimmerman case. Explain us a little bit more in detail on how you actually...
The trial, this is from way before the trial. This is, so basically the incident took place. There was a news report the next day in which they interview a bunch of the neighbors, and that news report was very favorable to George Zimmerman. Then all of a sudden, several weeks later, it's a national news story, and the same exact station is reporting the exact opposite of what was in their, literally what was in their news report the day after. And then I think it was a Fox affiliate that did this. And then there was another, they have a sister Fox affiliate that was kind of like leading the nation in just completely fake stories. That like the Orlando Sentinel was a newspaper, and then I think it was the Orlando Fox affiliate. And see, the Orlando Fox affiliate had a copy of this news, you know, the next day news report, and never aired it, but they were airing daily all these other news reports with fake claims. And so it's all over it's all over the national news that it was a white man in a white neighborhood. And so I just looked at the United States Census, and immediately I saw that the neighborhood was roughly 50% white, 25% black, and 25% Latino. And I found out pretty fast that George Zimmerman also was Latino. And so it was a Latino man in a heavily mixed, and I could also, they were also calling it a gated community. So it's supposed to be white man in an all-white gated community. And I could tell from Google Earth that it was not a gated community. There was no gate or fence anywhere. And so a lot of these, the claims in the national media, I could debunk in 30 seconds with Google. And so I wrote an article for Examiner.com in their politics section. This is at the height of the media frenzy. I mean, this was everybody's, they were saying this stuff on my local news here in Charleston. It was all over the country, every single day, all day long, this horrible murder of an innocent black kid. And so I put the information that was in the initial news report for the next day. And I go, this is the exact, there's stuff in here that's the exact opposite of what the media's saying. And I go, now here's several claims the media's making that I can prove are false just by rudimentary searches on Google. And I go, now they're making a lot of other claims because at this time, like, there was no information about the police report, no information about the autopsy, none of the pictures had been released. Most of the information is still under lock and key, but the media was just pulling things out of their ass. Like they were saying that George Zimmerman outweighed Trayvon Martin by 100 pounds. With the time, I couldn't disprove that. That was among the things that I figured were probably false. Well, it turned out that they were within about 10 pounds of each other. But so anyway, I write this article, and immediately it blows up into this huge thing. It ended up getting something like 200,000 Facebook shares. It was viewed 550,000 times.
Wow.
It was the biggest. It's one of the biggest articles in the history of Examiner.com, which is a major, major, major website. It's the biggest article in the history of the politics section of Examiner.com. And I had Amber Lyons, who is one of the most famous investigative journalists in America, called me at my house and told me that everyone at CNN headquarters was reading my article and that I had turned the tide. And it was basically within about 48 hours of my article where I drew attention to this original local newscast. The Orlando sister station played that newscast because there was public outrage going on in Orlando towards this media outlet because of my article. So they played the segment, but then they pretended, and see, at that time the interviews were a month old, but they pretended like it had just been filmed. So they played the segment, but they pretended like it was brand new. They didn't admit that they had been sitting on it and censoring it for a month. And then it was at that time that really about 48 hours after my article blew up that then Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all these other big names started defending George Zimmerman. And then as evidence actually started coming out, one by one, every single little tiny detail that the media was reporting, literally for the first 2 months, everything turned out to be false. The only stuff that was true was in this segment that was published. So you had this news clip that was published the next day by the local segment that was honest, and then you had 2 months of complete absolute fiction. And there's still these media, and then you had the Orlando Sentinel outright perpetrated a hoax claiming that they had audio experts that analyzed the audio and George Zimmerman saying racial slurs. That was a total hoax. And there was a big one where I think it was ABC, when ABC National News ran, you know, a major headline on their website. It was the main thing on their website saying police photo show George Zimmerman uninjured. And that was when the police had just released the photos. And the photos, he's got, like, blood all over his face and the back of his head.
Right.
And
right.
It was just blatantly, and so even as the photos were coming out, so that was a total hoax. And I think it was NBC that perpetrated the hoax where they doctored up the 911 call. Well, then it really came crashing down. Of course, by the time the trial came around, half of America or more was on George Zimmerman's side and defending him. And then by the time the trial was over, the majority of all Americans is only militant white-hating blacks that still think he's innocent because they have a political agenda. But then the trial comes on, and so they spend all this time claiming that George Zimmerman started this fight with him because he's a racist, and this fat, ugly girl who had been portrayed as basically Trayvon Martin's honorary widow takes the stand and says that he was calling George Zimmerman racial slurs to her over the phone and started the confrontation himself. And so then, you know, the star witness, the testimony of the star witness supported George Zimmerman. The star witness for the prosecution, that is. But you still have militant people walking around with Trayvon Martin T-shirts because they hate white people.
Yeah, and they show one or two pictures of them. It's either that BS media pick of him in, like, what, the eighth grade or something like that, where he actually looks like a clean cut.
The main picture they show of him, he looks like he's 11. Then you look at the pictures of him from right before the event, and he's tall. He's this big, tall football player. And then some more stuff that came out. Because his parents have cashed in. His parents have been making all kinds of money off of this ever since.
They trademarked his name too.
Yeah. Well, he had been. I mean, he was like a suspended from school for like 10 days. Something really serious. And there's different versions of the story. The school wouldn't say why he was suspended ever, for sure. But he's suspended for 10 days. His mom couldn't handle him, so she shipped him off to his dad's house. His dad didn't want to deal with him, so his dad dumped him at his girlfriend's house. His girlfriend didn't want to deal with him. She didn't even know where he was the night he was shot.
Huh. Nobody knew where to worry about this kid at all.
But then when they found out that they could cash in and make money, suddenly, you know, 2 months after the fact, they're crying on TV cameras. Oh, my beautiful angel. Cha-ching. Now they're on world tours, getting speaking fees and paying themselves huge salaries from the Trayvon Martin Foundation as the executives of a bullshit charity.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think you also reported there was a Trayvon Martin that was in St. Louis or something that was actually convicted of one or two fairly heinous crimes. Is that correct?
What, someone with the exact same name?
Next same name, yeah. He was up there committing crimes. I think it was either in Milwaukee or it was in St. Louis.
Right about the same time. Vaguely familiar. Now there's been over and over and over again. There's been attempts to lionize other black thugs as the next Trayvon Martin, and it always blows up in their face. There was one right here in Charleston, South Carolina, where someone calls the police in the ghetto and says there's a guy out here with dreadlocks waving a gun around. The first police officer gets there and tells the guy to drop the gun. He runs, then he turns, aims at the officer. The officer shoots his gun, and the bullet severed like one of his testicles or something, but he survived. And so the NAACP gets fired up. They think they got their very own Trayvon Martin. And the North Charleston Police Department calls the NAACP and the guy's mom in for a meeting. And they go, okay, this is the video from the police car of the guy waving the gun around. Here he is running away. Here he is turning around and aiming it at the officer. Here he is brandishing the same gun on Facebook, making gang signs. Here's a post from his mom saying, I love my thug. And so the NAACP walked away with their tail between their legs. But that scenario has been playing out all over America. There was one in New Orleans where this black teenager who had already been suspected of burglary, I think he had been arrested for some things already, hops a fence and is going to break into this guy's house. The white homeowner comes out, fires a shotgun and kills him. Well, they arrest this guy, and he was being held in jail for a long time, and all these militant black groups are out demonstrating, and they're saying that this is our own Trayvon Martin. Well, before the trial even started, this guy gets caught red-handed, burglarizing another home. The homeowner catches him. He had a gun on him, and so he's charged with all kinds of crimes. And then the prosecutors were basically humiliated into admitting that the white homeowner was innocent all along, because they were with the black groups in New Orleans were saying was that this black teenager was not trying to burglarize this evil white homeowner's house. He was just lost. And that he had hopped over this large fence because he was confused about where he was at.
That was
this is playing
story
out all over America. What's that?
Yeah, I mean, they always seem to come up with some cockamamie story to explain the clearly obvious behavior pattern. I mean, any police officer would know what's going on, but due to political correctness now, they're having to mask the true identity of the perpetrators.
Yeah. There's a good website here in Charleston. It's called CharlestonThugLife.com. And the guy doing this website, now he says he's in law enforcement. He keeps a secret identity because the Charleston Post and Courier and the Charleston City Paper has vowed to, you know, find out who he is and out him as a horrible racist and all this stuff. But he basically tracks gangbangers in the Charleston area just with the stuff they post on social media. And he's posted incredible stuff on this website, but it really But you can, like with the shootings in Myrtle Beach, you got national news stories, and they won't even admit the race of the perpetrator. In fact, they were in the national news. They had the event that took place at was called Black Bike Week. The media invented new names for the event rather than call it Black Bike Week. The NAACP calls it Black Bike Week. And the NAACP, the city had been trying to get rid of this event for years. The NAACP had sued the city of Myrtle Beach, and they had sued a bunch of hotels and restaurants. And they were each year, they set up a command post and passed out a hotline number for blacks to call if they thought they were being discriminated against, so the NAACP could come out and threaten people. Well, all that was totally censored, but this guy that does Charleston Thug Life, of course, I've been talking about the NAACP angle in protecting the violent criminals at this event for years, but the Charleston Thug Life guy, he like right off of Twitter and Facebook, he pulled up like just vast multitudes of information about the people involved, and it was all hardcore gangbangers, and these guys were just operating openly on Twitter and talking about being gangbangers on Twitter, and then the local authorities pretend like it doesn't exist and didn't go after them because it would have been, you know, racist because they're black. That's a big point of the website, that these black criminals are basically advertising on the internet who they are, but and then the media pretends like this doesn't exist.
Well, the thing that really bothers me the most. Go ahead.
What's that?
Go ahead. I'll just finish.
The Charleston City paper attacked this website and basically said it was demonizing innocent people, and some of the people he profiled on this website have gone on to be arrested for really horrible crimes, but basically the media is saying just to go on Facebook and say, hey, this black guy is advertising that he's a gangbanger thug and wants to do bad stuff, then it's you're a racist. You're cyber harassing this poor upstanding black youth.
Well, you know what?
So
what I really think is great about. Go ahead.
It's really taking quite a massive effort. All the media is engaged in this massive intimidation campaign to keep people from talking about black on white crime. They did. So after I was featured in prominently in a major AP article that was syndicated all over North America for exposing the Trayvon Martin hoax, the Southern Poverty Law Center published a whole bunch of crude attack pieces against me, and so they collaborated with the Charleston Post and Courier to do like an expose on me. So they put my picture on the top half of the front page of the Sunday edition with a made-up fake quote to make it look like I was endorsing slavery. And then they, of course, I was at an event like a town hall meeting type thing with some of the state senators, these neocons. They were basically, you know, saying, look, we got this, we want your opinions on this anti-immigration, or this effort to stop illegal immigration using state enforcement. Of course, at that point, they were grandstanding. In reality, they had been delaying this legislation for years. But so anyway, I went to this event and spoke out, and they took a whole bunch of pictures of me, and some of the pictures turned out quite well. One of them, if you take enough pictures of someone, they're going to look crazy in at least one of the pictures. So they got one where I look crazy, and they've published it on the front page twice now. And so this was the picture was actually taken in 2007, and this attack piece on me was published in 2012, and they used the same picture a second time, even though they had a whole bunch of newer pictures.
Yeah, it's insane.
So that's
all right, Kyle. So
Well, what we've definitely seen with the COCC website, you guys have actually helped change the narrative, at least bring to light a lot of the issue of colored-on-white crime and not being afraid to talk about it. I mean, it's clearly obvious that there's a bias in the media. However, we may have been seeing this trend reverse recently. Channel 12 News in Cincinnati did a 7-8-minute-long special on knockout game situation. And it was interesting because Rob Braun, and the who's the main anchor, and the actual news porter that was actually reporting it were both white, male and female respectively. And they talked about it, and they said specifically it was black teenagers attacking white adults. And they didn't seem to hold back anything, especially since Cincinnati has been just totally rife with black and white crime, especially since
there's
riots.
There's been widespread racially motivated black-on-white hate crime mob attacks in Cincinnati since at least the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That's been going on a long time on a regular basis. I grew up in Ohio, and Cincinnati was always notorious for white people being attacked by blacks. But after the because of the Trayvon Martin, see, the media really shot themselves in the foot with this Trayvon Martin thing because they lost all kinds of credibility. No one believes them anymore. And it really broke the taboo on talking about black on white crime for conservatives because, so, you know, first, no one would defend, none of these mainstream big-name conservatives would defend George Zimmerman. So I defended George Zimmerman on Examiner.com, and like I said, in a short amount of time, it got 200,000 Facebook shares and 550,000 views, maybe more by now because it's still up there. But at some point, the Examiner.com had a reboot to their software, and it wiped out everybody's Facebook shares. So I don't know how many views and whatnot it eventually got up to, but what was I saying?
How about the shares?
Oh, yeah, and so that gets real big. So then, like, 2 days later, then Hannity and Limbaugh are saying the same stuff I said in my article. And then it was like all of a sudden, and so I had been, then there was a column came out by a black columnist. What's that guy's name? Walter Williams, maybe?
Yes.
He wrote an article about the media censoring black crime, and it literally, like when I read his column, it looked like something I had written myself. He took, because I had been writing stuff on the internet for years and years, repeatedly quoting from the editors of the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune and all these different major editors who openly admitted that they censor black crime. And so he did a column about that. And it was like all of a sudden, The Blaze, which I think is owned by what's-his-face, the phony
Glenn
from
Beck.
Fox News. Yeah, Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck.
Clash Daily. Bunch of big, well, WorldNet Daily became a big one. So a whole bunch of big, well-known conservative news sites with big-name writers all of a sudden started writing articles about black-on-white crime. And they started accepting submissions about black-on-white crime. There's people I know who started getting articles published on large conservative news websites about black-on-white crime. And then WorldNet Daily became a big one. And there was a guy, the guy that wrote the book White Guy Bleed a Lot, he started submitting articles about black-on-white crime to WorldNet Daily, And they became so popular that WorldNet Daily started promoting him like he was one of their featured authors. In fact, now they've even been, Google has threatened to ban WorldNet Daily from their Google syndicated ad network over that guy's articles. And he's so popular that WorldNet Daily stood by him, and they altered their software so that when you view one of his columns, it shows private ads. It doesn't show Google syndicated ads. But they stood by him even when Google threatened them over him. And so there was a big breaking of the dam, at least among alternative conservative media, about reporting on black on white crime because of the Trayvon Martin thing. I mean, that really is what caused it. And so now it's slowly trickling closer and closer to the mainstream. And so you got a few rogue news stations here and there that are more honest than others. And for some reason, now I can tell you that the local radio talk shows in Cincinnati have been very right-wing and have been talking about black-on-white crime since the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the reason that the reports you're talking about were literally it was an expose on black-on-white crime as a news segment on the local news. Maybe the reason that came about is because that station could have producers and anchormen and stuff whose background is in Cincinnati talk radio. And Cincinnati mm-hmm. talk radio has been talking about black-on-white racially motivated hate crime since at least the 90s. And see, they got WLW, which is a 50,000-watt station. Under certain weather conditions, you can pick it up in the southern suburbs of Columbus, Ohio. And the people on that station would talk about black-on-white crime all the time. So that's probably why you see this happening in the Cincinnati television media now, because so many of the people at that station have background in Cincinnati talk radio and have been hearing black-on-white crime being exposed and people responding to it. And see, the whole point is to get people to watch the news. And so what's happened is because black-on-white crime is so censored and has been censored for so long in the so-called mainstream media, that then when someone goes out and actually talks about it, the public responds by supporting that media outlet. And so this is actually a winning topic. Talking about black-on-white crime is now a winning topic that is going to bring viewers to your television show or listeners to your radio show or eyeballs to your website. And so mm-hmm. it's possible that more television stations will take notice, and then it'll break more and more into the so-called mainstream television news. But even, you know, Fox News is supposed to be so conservative. Even that's a bunch of phony bullshit that censors black crime. I mean, they were going along, you know, Fox News was going along with the far-left narrative that blacks attacking white people was some brand new thing back when the attacks in New York City were getting all that publicity. And the attacks in New York City are still going on. There's black-on-white hate crimes weekly, probably daily, in New York City. and they've stopped talking about it now. It's just a little short thing. But even phony baloney Fox News was going along with the far left claim that it was some mysterious brand new quote unquote game.
Well, we definitely see that the CFCC website has been a major leader in trying to expose this. And when people do forward a lot of these stories on Facebook, they are having a positive effect, Kyle. So in closing, what would be the best ways to not only follow your work on CFCC, but also any Twitter or other websites that you want to promote?
Well, I have close to 25,000 followers on Twitter. That's like Kyle_Rogers, or if you just type Kyle Rogers, it should come up in first place, because I don't know if there's any other Kyle Rogers that has as many Facebook followers as me. So people can get on there. I send out messages about news stories and stuff. Just go to cfcc.org and Facebook share the posts. I mean, that's the best way to get the word out. We've had the record on the CFCC website now. Around last February, we had like 200,000 unique visitors in one day. And then we had several other days the same week where we got over 90,000.
Well, it's definitely having a presence on the web, that's for sure. So we want to definitely recommend everybody definitely check out Kyle Rogers' work on his Twitter at KyleRogers76, and also look at the website at cfcc.org, and also the Twitter site at cfcc76 as well. So, Kyle, thanks for coming on the St. Thomas Show today and give us information on how we can inform ourselves about the bias in the media against colored on white crime for sure.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good one, brother.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. We're going to pay some bills and be right back with the voice of reason from thelastgreatstand.com. Be right back after these messages.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American-first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one-world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
I'm the brother of a truck-driving mother. Boogity, 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 boogity.
You talk about war with the government, and everybody's, no, 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 we can't do that. That would be wrong. I don't know about anybody else out there, but I've never picked any candidate. Nobody that I've ever said, hey, let's get this guy up and put him in office. No, never happened. They always give us and say, here's your selection. And then we got to vote on whoever they give us. And whoever they are is being picked for us by some establishment of people that we don't even know. I speak in general. I always have, always will. I don't know why I do that, but I do. When I speak, I just flat out speak in general.
Catch a ride with the Dashboard Outlaw. Sunday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Only on Truth Emergers Radio Network.
Have you heard any state, federal, or local government passing a law, statute, an ordinance, a regulation, anything, policy, a department, anything that enhances freedom and liberty? Can anybody think of that? I can't. I've never heard of anything. Everything that they make as a law is restricting us, but not them.
Hi, friends. When it comes to reaching your audience, the best approach is in person. If you have a band, business, or charity event, you want to reach people in the best ways and venues possible. If you're touring in the Midwest, you need DMI Promotions. Their friendly staff is ready, willing, and able to assist you in venue locations and event promotions to make your show or event successful. Contact Tori Webb at 515-865-4463 or toriwebbdmi@gmail.com. DMI Promotions, your Midwest promotional team and proud sponsor of Truth Emerges Radio.
It's a House of Blues break.
Hey, sometimes it's a whole lot easier listening to the blues than attempting to try to define it. According to blues guitarist Eric Girardi, the blues means so much to so many different people that it's just hard to define exactly what it is that makes this music so appealing.
But some people, it has such a profound effect. I really don't know, but all I know is the first time my dad threw me on my bed and made me listen to Jimmy Reed, and he scratched my Ozzy Osbourne record in the process and said, "Son, time we had a talk. Listen to this." It had a profound effect on me, and I just, whenever I picked up a guitar, that's what would come out. I'd be playing Baby What You Want Me to Do no matter what I wanted to play. It just kept coming out. So let's just not question it, and let's just be happy that it's there, I suppose.
We'll be right back.
Hi, welcome back to the St. Thomas Show here on blogtalkradio.com/truthemerges on the Truth Emerges Radio Network. You can also listen in and call in at 347-855-8301. That's 347-855-8301. That was a local Dayton area band, Bows and Arms Band, with the song Voices from the album Edge of My Mind from 2005. Very solid second album. And the third album, What's Life 4, is even far superior. For more information on that band, check out brothersinarmsband.com. And definitely check out on my music website, the HMD Music Resource Guide at THEHMD.com. There's a very interesting interview I did with the Brothers in Arms Band for about an hour. You can find it on that website there as well. So definitely worth tuning in and checking out. And we always try to feature a lot of great talent here in the Dayton area as well as everywhere else. If you have music you'd like to submit to play on the St. Thomas Show or also feature in our music mix on 106.9 FM here in the Springboro area, feel free to email me at springborotea@aol.com, and we should be able to check you out. Make sure you try to include a good description of your band, a basic EPK, or at least have a link to an EPK, which is an electronic press kit. Also have at least 2 to 5 songs available for download, if not a whole album. So that way, if you really like your stuff, I'll be playing lots of tracks off of it and also featuring it in our music rotation. Again, you'll be able to hear the St. Thomas Show live Thursday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is only 2 hours, but we do a post-recorded third hour, which you can hear at 6 o'clock in the morning on Friday and 4 p.m. in the afternoon on Saturday in its entirety on 106.9 FM in Springboro era on Borough Radio. All right, we're definitely going to be coming up here on my next guest, which, again, that song is was Voices by Brothers in Arms Band, so we all have the last voice of reason from a very great hardcore conservative website called The Last Great Stand, and he's also going to give us the history on where the website name came from and what his general target audience is, because I think he's got a very good thing going there. And real quick, Daily News reported in our meeting that we did the other night at the Warren County GOP, we did try to do a resolution to unendorse John Kasich for his second gubernatorial run here in the great sovereign state of Ohio. Unfortunately, we didn't have the votes to do it. I think if we had worded the resolution right, I think we could have done it better. So, however, we are working some other resolutions to push, and I do think we will get a majority, if not a unanimous vote, on some of these stuff, as we now have a complete Tea Party takeover of the Warren County, Ohio GOP, like I reported recently. You want to find more information also to keep track on what's going on within the Warren County GOP to the best of my ability to report to you. You go to my campaign website at thomas4ohio.org. And you'll find video logs as well, links to my video logs and what's going on. I did a 20-minute video the first night. That's available on youtube.com/springborotea, and you'll be able to look up Tea Party Takes Over Warren County GOP. And I have another vlog I have to do tomorrow to update what's going on. But just briefly, in the Dayton Daily News, unfortunately, interesting enough, they had Larry Budd, who's their reporter there, and it actually came up to a vote. Do we allow him to stay within our meeting? Because technically, even though we're public officials, it was a private meeting, and which had some debate. But it was interesting enough because we voted actually to keep him there or not. Majority voted yes. I was the sole nay vote, and I'm proud to say that I was. Just like John Quincy Adams says, I always vote on principle because I could take with I could cherish the sweetest reflection that my vote is never lost. Again, John Quincy Adams. So, because the guy's a snake in the grass, and he's a real piece of shit, and I think we're trying to expose this guy. He's part of the problem, reason why the Dayton Daily News is not only a dying newspaper, but also Cox Media, which runs Dayton Daily News, WHIO AM, FM, and TV, which violates the FCC of having all three mediums in any given market, has clearly, obviously, got a stranglehold in the Dayton area when it comes to media. And they also own many other neighboring newspapers as well, such as in Hamilton and other places. So if you want some a little more quality local news, go to Miami Valley Newspapers,
pick up the Springboro Star Press, which my regular column is there on the Freedom File, and also look up other newspapers that we feature there through Miami Valley Newspapers. I do believe you go to MiamiValleyNewspapers.com or you go to Facebook.com/MiamiValleyNewspapers and follow the respective links in there and like that page and support independent media and those local newspapers that are willing to print the truth for the most part and not be biased by all this political correctness. All right, I'm very much looking forward to talking to my next guest. We got a little late with our first guest, and we had a little bit of a show delay at the beginning due to Blog Talk. Their phone system wasn't functioning properly, but I think they got that fixed now. But we have the Voice of Reason, again, from the Kick-Ass website, the lastgreatstand.com. I highly recommend you go to this website and also follow his very active Twitter account. It's actually starting to explode on Twitter, as a matter of fact. And so, shall I say, Mr. Reason, welcome to the Sonny Thomas Show.
It is great to be with you. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for coming on, sir. Like I said, we really appreciate
you don't fan of political correctness.
No. Well, especially since these damn teachers through Common Core teach critical theory instead of critical thinking, and critical theory is the parent of political correctness. And I've explained it on there a few times, and I've also featured a couple of CFCC documentary on critical theory, which clearly shows that, and it basically uses a lot of the newspeak from 1984 to not only brown shirt you using certain words, but to eventually eradicate those words out of the American lexicon, such as using the word bossy. So I see you've covered a lot of stuff such as this on your website there, Mr. Reason. So feel free to expand upon that, would you please?
On the website or the political correctness?
Well, either or, take your pick.
Well, I'll tell you where the website, you know, how I got started with it. It more or less started off with me watching the news, being an armchair quarterback, constantly screaming at the television set, and you know, I got a big mouth, and you know, I was constantly influencing people, you know, towards my opinions, and I guess to go even back a little bit further, I grew up in North Jersey, so we knew quite a few people who lost their lives in the Trade Center, and that was really my introduction into politics. Before that, I couldn't have told you who a Republican was, what a Democrat was, what either one stood for. So as I began to research what politics was, you know, I was famous for asking why, or, you know, I need to know more. And that got me going down the rabbit hole that I've found myself now crawling deeper and deeper into over the last 8 years. And I needed some way to vent and get some of this information that's been locked up in my head for so long to get it out. And as you probably see, some people comment, you know, you're a loon. You got to, you know, are you wearing your tinfoil hat today? you know, all those types of comments. And all I usually have the same response. You know, I say, feel free to call me anything that you want to. I prefer you just call me correct, because I tend to be right a lot more than I'm wrong. The further you get down this rabbit hole, as you and I talked about one day, our government is capable of the unthinkable, dating back all the way as far back as, I recently posted a clip on it, posting on it, 70 years ago, when they engaged in Operation Paperclip, the sick and twisted, distorted, medieval things that they were doing back then, even to our own military soldiers, if they were capable of that 70 years ago, that should put into perspective what they're capable of today. And sadly, I keep my sight rated G. Most people, they can't handle a lot of the stuff that I put out there that's rated G, so I keep the R stuff to myself, just because I know I'll lose readers. They just will not be able to comprehend that our government's capable of some of the things that they are sadly very capable of. So that's my job. That's why I started the site. It's I get nothing from the site other than hoping that someday in the very near future when the economy implodes, or martial law is declared, or it, you may or may not have seen, I just put a posting up about a lot of local militia boys that went out and defended Bundy have just set up a station in Texas on the border. And we know what happened the last time those guys were out. That's when they met the feds, and but for that director who unsuspectingly stepped in and saved a shootout, who knows what we're in for down there. I suspect the title or the first few lines of my article is today is a scary day indeed. I hope we don't look back and remember today as the beginning of the war. But it might very well be. We're coming up on those times.
Well, I've definitely seen some of the posts on your website, especially following your Twitter. I mean, I think you've definitely built up a very good following very quickly because of the fact that truly you are the voice of reason, because of, when you look at some of the other conservative websites out there, I definitely think you run ahead of the pack on many issues. Is there any particular topic that's kind of like a pet peeve of yours that you love to cover?
Yeah. Let me take that as kind of a two-part answer. The first part, as far as my explosion on Twitter, same thing goes for Facebook. I've only been around for about a year and a half. Technically, I've been around for about 2.5 years, but the first year I had 100 followers, and they were really just friends that did it out of obligation. They probably had me muted on their feeds, so they didn't have to deal with me. They hear from me enough in person. And then it just took off. And in about a year and a half, between Twitter and Facebook, there's somewhere around 70, 75,000 followers, and it's just been growing like a weed. I can't slow it down. And I think the reason for that, number one, is my subject matter. There are, as you mentioned, a couple of things that I definitely focus on quite a bit, and I'll get to those in a second. The other thing that I try to pride myself on that I have yet to come across, and I hope I do come across one, another website that does quite what I do. Everybody's got a blog out there, but I've yet to see anybody do their posts the way I do mine. Typically what I see, if I see a link, is somebody will cut and paste a link from another news source, whether it be a USA Today, you pick the source, they'll put it on their own backdrop and then post the link on their site. And not that they don't give credit to where it came from. I mean, otherwise that would be plagiarism. So they do give credit, but I just think that readers want more than a different backdrop, or a backsplash on what they're reading, So I try to give them that.
Right.
So what you get first is you get my comment on whatever the article is, what I think of it, or what I think of how it fits into the bigger picture. And then more importantly, either included in my comments or at the end of the article, somewhere in there, I try to post but several other links, usually 10, 15, somewhere around there, so that you can see the evolution of the story. You can see where it was 2 years ago. You can see where it was 6 months ago. You can look at any story and read in a vacuum. None of these things really appear to be that bad. And this coming from the most cynical person ever. I can read it and go, there's really nothing that bad about that. But when looked at in the greater context, there is an absolutely petrifying picture. It's just undeniable. So as far as the topics that are my hot buttons, certainly one of them, and one of the ones that I've gotten to witness the public's transformation of is the FEMA camps. 2 years ago when I first started talking about those, you're crazy, you're a nut. Now Fox News is covering them, which I
not
almost
so much,
disturbing. that concerns me. Once it gets to the point where the media is talking about them, what is the government really doing? because they're only reporting what they're going to be allowed to report on. But FEMA, a lot of my posts now, I've got coverage of Barack Obama talking about FEMA camps and how he plans to run them. So it's been you can go all the way back to my very first post on FEMA camps and see what I had to say then and see the evolution over a 2.5 year period of what I've learned and you know what I've been able to share. The whole purpose of it all is I don't think there's a whole lot unless you're independently wealthy. I don't think there's people email me all the time. What can I do? What can I do? What do you suggest? Where are you going to be? Blah, blah, blah. And my response is always the same. My suggestion is pray that you go quickly and, you know, just pray that you got your house in order when it comes. Because it's going to be unfathomable once we get to that point. There's really nothing that anybody, unless you're independently wealthy, there's really nothing that anybody can do. I don't think, anyway. It's just going to be such pandemonium. But if I can help somebody to realize that maybe they need to have a conversation with their children, you know, if something happens and we can't reach each other or the cell phones are down, have a meeting spot, you know, something. Because I know in my last days I want to be spent with my family. You know,
amen, bro.
I don't have a wife or children, but I do have family that mean a lot to me. And God willing, if the National Guard's on every street corner, I'm gonna be with my family, and you know whatever's going on. And if you're not ready for that, or you get your head buried in the sand trying to pretend like these things aren't really happening, I'm sorry, they're really happening, and they're really horrible.
Well, let's shift gears on that for a second, because the fact that this whole border situation is clearly, obviously, by design, it's totally run by the Obama administration. They've basically been put most of the Border Patrol on almost paid administrative leave, from my understanding. Murrieta, California, where there's a major clash between protesters and them having 72 illegal aliens dumped into their town every 48 hours or something like that. I mean, it's just getting out of hand. And then what's interesting enough is InfoWars is reporting that apparently the county sheriff there, which is Riverside County in California, which is on the border, they're reporting that the sheriff has threatened to arrest anyone who stops these buses from trying to drop these damn kids off, which is interesting because I called the Riverside Sheriff's Department. Matter of fact, the sheriff is Stanley Sniff, I think his name is. What a hell of a name to have. Jesus Christ, I tell you what, if I was his mother or father, I think I'd slap him. But anyways, a name like that, my God. But the thing was, I called basically to, as an outsider looking in, say, hey, you know, I can tell you this, if this shit starts coming up into my county, I'm going to be telling Larry Sims, hey, are you going to stand with us, or are you going to let these damn illegals keep coming in here and infesting our county? The reason why I say it specifically is because at Mason, or Monroe, Ohio, has the largest concentration of Hispanics in the Midwest next to Chicago. And a lot of that is because of all the construction going on just north of Cincinnati and Westchester. And so we're starting to get a huge Hispanic population just popping up everywhere. They're taking all the fairly available apartment complexes that are around at a fairly good price. They're already turning the neighborhoods into slums. And we see a larger presence in the Dayton area. I mean, Xenia Avenue is always traditionally in East Dayton been a crappy neighborhood. But wherever there's a cantina, a La Tienda, or a Catholic church, that is like their focal point. And they're quickly taking over that street block by block, house by house. And nobody's saying anything about it. If they do, it's turning into Little Tijuana down there. So
well,
I can see some type of shenanigans going on. Well, I see the type of shenanigans going on. I got to ask yourself, there's clearly, obviously, a larger plan going on here. This is Cloward and Piven on steroids, and it's
absolutely,
and it's pretty obvious that they're bringing in these kids that are ranging between the ages of 8 and 16 on average, because by the not so much the 2016 race, but definitely by the 2020 race, if we don't already have a Republican in there that's worth the shit that's going for re-election, if it's Hillary – oh, my God, dude, the Republican Party will cease to exist like the Whig Party did in the 1850s. And I've been pleading for my local Republican Party to start seeing it for what it is. Oh, we're no longer going to be a we're not going to matter anymore. So would you agree or disagree
anymore,
with my
anymore.
Ideas? Oh, yeah, but
I think
still.
That's inevitable. You know, people ask me, why are you fighting this? You know, and my answer is because that's how I'm wired. But I think it's completely 100% inevitable. There's a 0% chance that we will avoid it. We are going to be a one-party system. Demographics are just set up that way. I've even postured in one of my more recent posts. I don't have specifics because they usually don't. Well, I've heard them mention states where I think the most recent one I heard was a bus just dropped a whole bunch of them off in Massachusetts. And I will hypothesize to you that what they have done is, or what they're in the process of doing is systematically figuring out, I'm sure this was done long ago, just like the contractors were hired long before the influx started. That's how you know this whole thing was planned by Obama, or at least within the administration anyway. They've systematically figured out where they need the boat, you know, where they're a hair short, and that's where these people are systematically being bused to ensure sooner before, because it's going to happen no matter what, but to ensure that it happens sooner before it happens later, that, you know, a lot of the counties that were within 1 or 2 percentage points are going to no longer be, you know, they'll be 5% the other way now because of all the illegal voting that they've got going on. I specifically think they're busing these people to those locations for that reason.
So it sounds like classic gerrymandering to me.
To the extreme, on steroids, yeah.
Yeah, and if it's not gerrymandering, this is the beginning of the Obama youth. Because the fact that these guys are going to be appreciative of that usurper we have in the White House that's basically bringing them here, giving them food, clothing, shelter, education, all this other jazz. We're not going to have
any. Who's giving it to them? Who is?
Oh, yeah, the federal government.
We are.
Yeah.
You and me.
Well, yeah. At our expense. But, I mean, the bottom line is you and I would sit there and we're basically mortgaged to the hilt, basically economic slaves to even try to get a college degree. Yet these sons of bitches can come in there not even speak a lick of English. We have to lower our test standards to match their IQ level as well as their language deficit because they can't speak English for the lick. And then we have to double up on teachers to be able to speak Spanish, especially in the Southwest, but now we're coming in the Midwest. So artificially creating a demand there, but still. I mean, these unions are going to be scared because, as we're seeing, the teachers are going to start disappearing because as technology improves, there's going to be less need for teachers. And so we're going to have a serious problem.
The language
issue
is very big.
Oh, big time. I mean, English is the language of business. If you can't speak English, we're not doing business.
I heard today, I don't know if it was nationally or if it was here in my state, that this fall's kindergarten class is predicted to be 39% do not speak English. 39. I'm not positive if it was my state. It was somewhere. Wherever it is, that's insane. I don't care if it's one town. That's one town too many that has that problem. That is lunacy.
Yeah, they don't even know
basic
English. I mean, they barely even know slang words in English. Because the fact that they're basically taught, especially if they follow Mecha, La Raza, and some of these other pro-Hispanic groups that are more or less the Hispanic KKK, that they should not capitulate to any of our cultural needs or acceptances, that they should capitulate to
us. So
they'll
demand our flag taken down from their classrooms?
Yeah. They're not allowed to wear American flags and Cinco de Mayo. Hell, if you even get tacos on Cinco de Mayo, you're basically considered racist because it looks like you're making fun of them. I mean, this is newspeak from 1984 on steroids.
Well, I fear that we are at a tipping. I am fearful because we're all going to lose people that we love if it comes down to that. I do get a little bit annoyed at some of the bravado that goes on. I've got one of my posts that I have is how will you respond when they come for your guns? And there's always just massive amounts of bravado comments in there before people read the article or before they read what I really wrote. Because, my site is meant to help people. Yes, am I bombastic? Yes. Am I incredibly sarcastic? Yes. Do I write hoping that there's a liberal on the other end ready to smash their computer to pieces? Yes. Do I write hoping that conservatives are laughing their asses off? Yes. But I also know that it's 100% intended to inform. And, for instance, with the gun issue, you know, one thing that I like to bring to people's attention, you know, the cold dead finger pokes, you know, it's a great saying, and I'm with you, but have you really thought it through? And I'll give you an example. My hometown that I grew up in was 7,000 people. The chief of police daughter was a year younger than me. I knew her very well. There were 7 police officers and knew all them very well, too, for one reason or another, most of which were not very good. But we all knew each other. We went to CCD together. We went to the same churches. My high school had 600 kids from 7 through 12. Everybody knew everybody. My point is Barack Obama and Eric Holder are not going to show in their "we love big government" jackets to collect your guns. You know, it's going to be the guy that sits at the end of your church pew who, you know, you and his daughter go to. So when you talk about, you know, you're going to ventilate whoever shows up at your, are you really going, have you really thought this through? You know, and those are the issues I try to bring to people's attention that, you know, we can all talk a good game, but I think the time for talk is, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see how the change that needs to take place is going to take place. I don't see how Brock is going to let it not take place to where it gets to violence. I mean, he continues to put the feds at odds with the militia. At some point, cooler heads are not going to prevail. And I will go as far as to say that he will plant somebody on the side of the militia to fire the first shot to ensure that cooler heads do not prevail.
There'll be a false flag in that, for
not
sure.
That's straight from the Barack Obama playbook. You know, plant somebody on the other side, have him fire at a federal officer, make sure that the guy's an expert marksman, you know, so he hits him in a non-critical area, but just enough so that the weapons of war, as Barack likes to call them, can be rolled out onto the streets, because they're already in your towns. They were rolled out 14 months ago. I think it was March of last year, as the bulk of the military equipment returned back from Iraq. It was dispersed to various cities and towns around the country for the use of local law enforcement. There's links. Many of them are pretty old. I haven't posted any of those in a while. But for a while, I had the videos of just train after train after train of just tanks and tanks and APVs and everything you can imagine just being shipped all over the country, being shipped to your town. It's there right now, just waiting. It's crazy. He cannot wait to open fire on Americans. He just cannot wait.
Well, to be devil's advocate for a second, if you look at, for example, the TV series SWAT, when it came out in the early 70s, that was one of the things that they talked about, was that when they started at SWAT in Los Angeles, it was actually you know, a lot of Vietnam veterans obviously joined the police force in various cities across the country. I mean, they already had the skills and the basic stuff, and so it seemed like a natural transition from, essentially policing duties there in Vietnam to actually doing it here in the world. But they started doing SWAT because of the fact that they wanted to have a military type of presence available in case of mass hijackings or things that would normally leave police officers maybe pinned down or not able to fight back with the better quality firepower, especially as we saw when the drug war started. A lot of the cops were outgunned by the drug runners, you know, 5-1. I mean, they got a standard service revolver, and a shotgun on average, but these guys are coming out with all sorts of Uzi 9mm and rocket launchers and all sorts of crazy shit that they're picking up from gun runners that, again, what we've seen is when you have a major military situation such as Vietnam, and a lot of the shows in the 80s kind of showcase this, a lot of these guys will have skills to pay bills, and now that the war is over, what the hell did they do? Go to a factory, put the same nut in the same bolt for 30 years? No, they're going to use those skills. They're going to run drugs, run guns, do other, maybe get involved with black ops, do other things, because that's what they're trained to do. and that's really all they know, and of course they can make good money off of it. So you created a standing army, so to speak, whether it's out in the open or clandestine, or they just turn into mercs or outright, and so it helps fuel the problem. And you got a gun war going on, you got a drug war going on, and you got this damn Fast and Furious to make the Second Amendment look bad when it's not only was started by President Bush's regime, but totally ramped up under this usurper we have in the White House. And yet, when Eric Holder and company are called on it, nobody does anything. I mean, how many infractions is it going to take before we either impeach this bastard we got in the White House or just outright go in, throw shackles on him, and charge him with war crimes against humanity? What's it going
to
take?
I would suggest that neither is going to happen. War is going to be the solution. I'm not advocating it. I don't want it. But you realize that the both solutions, whether it be the – well, at first, you can't impeach an usurper because he's just that. He's an usurper. He's not eligible for the office of the presidency. Therefore, he cannot be impeached because all you're doing is legitimizing a presidency that doesn't exist. That being said, that'll never happen, ever, ever, ever happen, because every member of Congress knew in 2008 and in 2012 that he was not eligible for office. Yet every one of them, because, and I'm not saying I fault them, because they're human. We all are. I'm not saying I would have done what they did either, so don't mistake that.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody, I don't care who you are, could have effectively brought a case of Obama's citizenship before the American people and had it go anywhere without it ending their own career almost instantaneously. So no matter how many of them knew it or not, really doesn't matter, because the political environment and the media was such that it was never going to happen. So instead, they all ratified the Electoral College's decision, and in a sense, as one of my articles said, they put the rope around their own necks. So for them to come out now and say, we've got an usurper, they're accomplices to it. So that's never going to happen. We're never going to see that, whether we have the votes in the Senate or not. So because, again, it's going to require them admitting that they were there and they allowed it to happen, which is just those egos are way too big. I'm all for impeachment proceedings, whether we have the votes or not. I've done several pieces just because, again, I try to educate people. Impeach him. Most people have no idea what that word means or what that process means or what needs to take place for a president or any executive branch member, for that matter, to be impeached. It's not just because they did something wrong. There needs to be a vote within the House to begin impeachment proceedings, which take place, in other words, for trial, in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And in the Senate are the ones that are the quote-unquote judges that will do the voting. So just impeach him. So I've done a lot of pieces on trying to explain to people the way that the process works. But I would argue that even if we knew 100% that we were going to lose in the Senate a vote to have him impeached, that it is still in our best interest to bring about the proceedings. I don't care about 1996. I don't care what happened back then, because we're living in completely different times with a completely different president. Nothing is comparable other than the word impeachment is in both sentences. Other than that, there are no similarities to the two, so I can't stand when people don't you remember
well,
what
you saw. You saw Dennis Kucinich trying to bring up impeachment charges against President Bush for a whole host of general crimes, which is significantly less than what this bastard's been doing. I mean, for example, one of his keynotes that he was bringing up impeachment charges was Bush using signing statements essentially as an executive line item veto, saying that I'm going to enforce this part of the law but not this part. And there's a reason why our founders said, governors have the right for line item veto but not presidents, because it undermines the whole legislation process because then you have to tailor it so that way whoever's ever in the White House hopefully won't veto it, because they'll just line item half your damn order out. So it defeats the purpose of even having debates and adding amendments and things and putting stuff together in a process when the executive is just going to say, take a black magic marker and say, screw all this shit, and then black out most of the document. And then you got to hope that the judicial branch goes back and says, nah, you can't do that. And we know the judicial branch has been totally compromised.
Well, in their defense, and I'm not one to rush to their defense, but at least the Supreme Court of the land has been handing Obama his rear end lately, which has been very assuring. I'm the first to say, I've also done a couple of pieces on the NSA and Justice Roberts. I absolutely believe that he was blackmailed into changing his decision for Obamacare.
Big time.
Absolutely. I mean, when you know all the facts of that situation.
Hang on there, Voice of Reason. We're going to take you into the third hour. And
okay.
We're definitely going to finish up within the third hour. We want to recommend everybody wants to hear him call in right now at 347-855-8301, and I'll keep you in queue to take your phone calls and talk about other issues on the top of the hour. And we will definitely be going to that point. And I'm looking forward to taking the calls and covering other important details there as well. So definitely check out websites at sunnythomas.com, springboardteaparty.com or .org, cfccohio.org, and thehmd.com. So fix out here on 106.9 FM, and definitely catch you on the flip side here just within 30 seconds. Salanta Maha. We are back in the third hour of the St. Thomas Show here on blogtalkradio.com/truthemergesradio. And we are talking with the Voice of Reason, who is also the founder and website master of thelastgreatstand.com. And we were just picking up on some of the shenanigans. We were just finishing up with talking about the impeachment of the usurper we have in the White House. And I definitely think it's something we need to look into, but unfortunately we're stuck until after the midterms because we have a Democrat.
See, I don't think we are.
We have a Democrat majority in the Senate, so it's almost going to be a waste of time to even go through the motions.
I disagree, and
really?
I've done quite a number of pieces on that. Haven't gotten as much attention as I'd like. The really deep stuff that I write tends to fly over the heads of a lot of my audience. Which is okay. That's why I write, hopefully to get more people's attention. But I absolutely believe that even if we knew that it was going to be 100-0 in favor of Barack Obama, that it would still be worth impeachment proceedings, especially pre-midterm elections. And the reason I say that is this, because in the course of the proceedings, they're going to get him under oath, and
mm-hmm.
people are going to learn the truth. So even if the senators won't vote him out, the American public is going to learn what is really going on, either he's going to lie and subject himself to prison, or, you know, his subordinates will, or the truth will come out. And then senators are going to be faced with a very difficult decision. Either vote to impeach and save their own job, or, you know, vote to back him up and guarantee their own pink slip. Now, I kind of oversimplify that a little bit, but I'm not 100% positive that we couldn't get the votes if it were held today, because I think enough senators would be on the hot seat with their constituents, especially the truth. I mean, we know enough truth without his testimony. Put him on the stand under oath and let more of the truth come out. And again, I think that even if it was a slaughter and he never did get impeached, if nothing else, there would be a permanent stain on his presidency, that stain being an impeachment, much like the stain that he has put on the United States. He tends to view himself in a very positive light. He tends to think historians are going to view him very positively. Let that stain forever exist there, whether he gets officially impeached or not. I think it's a win-win no matter what.
Well, one thing we try to do is we typically drop the P and capitalize the R, because that's essentially what he is, the resident, because he has not clearly shown that he is eligible to be in that noble office. And it's, and because the main thing was we do know for a fact that his stepfather had adopted him, Lolo Sotoro, as an Indonesian citizen, and we know he's gone to Pakistan, which no American citizen is able to do legally or casually, I should say, unless you're with the military. And we know he's been there. I mean, he's clearly obviously siding with the Muslims. He says it in his book. People finally zoomed in on his wedding ring and see if the inscription's all in Arabic. And then it's clearly obvious he's not a Christian, because a Christian doesn't act like that. And every country that we've now invaded, the Christians are getting slaughtered in droves, or the non-Muslims are getting slaughtered in droves. Like in Libya, blacks are getting maimed and killed just as bad as the Christians since Gaddafi's gone. And the reason why they took out Gaddafi was the fact that he was in the process of dumping the petrodollar and also unifying Africa and going with its own currency, the Afro, and helping build up the resources, which is clearly obviously against our typical mandate of being an empire, that we don't want another group having control of a complete continent without our approval, which is unacceptable because of the fact that they should be able to decide what they want to do in their own continent within their own quarters of each other, and look out for their own interests without having to worry about us telling a sovereign nation what the hell they can or cannot do.
Let me steal your thunder there for 1 second. You hit on a word that is near and dear to my heart, and I wish it was – there's a reason that no American – I shouldn't say no. There's a reason that few Americans have heard the word. There's a reason that the Department of Indoctrination – excuse me, Education doesn't teach it, and that is the word petrodollar. People need to understand the petrodollar. That is the end-all, be-all of everything that is going on this entire globe that we call Earth. It all, in some way, shape, or form, boils down to the petrodollar. And once we lose that status that we have as the world's reserve currency, and it's not a theory, it's not, you know, something that might happen, it is well-documented, in process, well set in motion. Once we lose the status of the reserve currency and the petrodollar is no more, that is when we are going to get catapulted back to the Stone Age here in the United States while the rest of the world continues to move on.
Oh, it'll be Bill Paxton, man. Game over, man! Game over!
except it won't be a game. It'll be your neighbor coming over to kill you and your family just for food.
It'll be like that movie, The Purge, for real. I mean, but that'll be the beginning of it, and then it'll just gradually get worse.
I constantly try to come back to my articles on the petrodollar, and they get – I've got articles that have been shared 40, 50,000 times. I'm lucky if some of those have been viewed 2 or 3,000 times, much less shared that many times, because it's not –
you know, it's not flashy. It doesn't have a picture of Trey Gowdy saying something catchy, you know, so people don't want to that. If you want to understand every, and you plural, meaning the audience, want to understand what is going on in American politics and, you know, European politics, in global, in universe politics, it all boils down in every government war room to the petrodollar. There is nothing that does not ultimately revolve around that. And once that no longer exists and countries are very, very, very strategically making sure that they're in position for when that does no longer exist, that they're going to be set. Like I said, this is not theory. This is not conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy fact. This is very, very verifiable. And that's how you know the end is near, because it's just the petrodollar. It's the key to it all. Everything, no matter what your question is, that's the answer somehow. It'll
Well, we know the forces are on the move for that. We know the forces are on the move for that because of the fact that we're already starting to see major countries already getting in the process of getting ready to dump the dollar. We see China's getting ready to
Russia's getting ready to do it.
Japan's getting ready to do it.
Russia and China just formed the world's largest oil company that does not accept the petrodollar. May 22nd, Putin released the press release from his most recent trade talks with China, and they're no longer doing any trades, let alone oil, using the U.S. dollar. China has stocked their reserves with, I want to say it's like 4,000 tons of gold, which is like a third of the available gold on the planet that's been mined or something absurd like that. I'm making up the numbers, but I'm not too – whatever the number is, it's crazy absurd. And with all their reserve currency that they bought from us, you know, all those treasury notes, whatever, they're using the dollar, while it still has value, to buy up what little manufacturing we have here in the States so that when all hell does break loose, to boil down why it's going to be like Mad Max beyond Thunderdome here in the United States is because our dollar is going to be worth nothing. We're going to be bankrupt. Nobody's going to be lending us anything. Our printing presses are going to be permanently turned off, so we can't import anything. I say anything, that's rather drastic, but we're not going to be able to import enough to meet our needs. We don't produce enough to meet our needs, and the only way that we would be to manufacture stuff. Well, you know, all that's been outsourced overseas. What little is here still, the Chinese are using our dollars and their reserves to buy up our plants so that when the time comes, it's still their show. We're going to have to rent our factories from them. And one of my articles goes into great detail about how the Chinese are buying up all our manufacturing plants for that specific reason. I mean, they're going to own us from top to bottom.
Oh, yeah, it's clearly obvious. And not only that, but then they're going to come in and enforce everything that they will own because the fact that it'll be almost like we did with Japan after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, I mean, they're basically going to have a military takeover of some sort because they're going to have to start conquering us from the actual, an actual grand war, which is interesting because they try to pull that. That's the reason why Admiral Yamamoto never attacked the United States' homeland because, in fact, they knew there would be a sniper behind every blade of grass. I don't think it's going to be as much so now because the Second Amendment's so under attack and so many demographics of our people have been denied their use of firearms, if not the use, even the privilege of having them. And I shouldn't say privilege, let's just say right, because they find all different backdoor ways to try to screw you. That and now with Obamacare, they could just try to say that you're mentally incompetent and that you can't have any firearms. And of course, they're disarming our veterans as soon as they come back off the plane from whatever theater they've been in. So, I mean, it's clearly obvious that there's a major gun confiscation going on initially on the surface.
There is an attempt.
And then when they – yeah, go ahead.
But it ends there. They will never – never is a strong word. They will never get our guns unless we give them to them. It is completely in our hands what ends up happening. Because as of right now, there are approximately 100 million Americans that own 300 million guns. Our standing army is 1.5 million, assuming every one of them stayed to fight. Throwing probably, I dare not ask how many are in DHS, Obama's private little army there. Either way, the only army on earth that could remotely compete with a 100 million person army with 300 million weapons is China, and that's if they landed their entire army, you know, on our shores. So they're never getting our guns unless we give them to them. Now, I'm not saying people won't give them to them, because they're going to have every threat in the world. You know, we'll do this, we'll do that, we'll imprison. But if we all stand together, united, you're not getting the damn guns. They're not getting them. Because put yourself in the position of a law enforcement officer who's been tasked with going around, you know, for, let's say, the month. Let's give you a really long life expectancy and say that, you know, you've been tasked for a month of going door-to-door collecting flat. Are you going to take that job? I'm not. I'm going to hand you my shield and say, thanks anyway, I'll go dig ditches. I'm not getting blown to pieces, you know, because you want somebody else's guns. No. The only way they're getting them is if we give them to them. So people need to be smart about that. Do not turn them in, because if we stand together, they cannot get them. There's no force on earth that can disarm us unless we do it voluntarily.
So what other shenanigans do you see that is going on, not only with the administration, but just maybe some policies going on statewide that's got your attention?
Well, I mean, of course, this, you know, the Obamacare fiasco. I'm almost 40. I'll be 40 in January. So needless to say, my family's getting up there. That's a huge concern of mine. My biggest concern, ironically enough, is that's why I go, partially why. I'm not sure that I will ever officially go under my real name on the site. Not that I have anything to hide. I hope to have a future in politics at some point. However, my concern right now is for the kids. I just kind of went in about 20 different directions there. I'm pursuing a career where my political rants, for the time being, best be kept until I'm fully on board, and then, you know, then my First Amendment rights will be reinstated, so to speak. But until then, and the reason I've chosen to do what it is that I'm choosing to do, at enormous personal sacrifice, even with no children of my own, is because it rips my heart to shreds to know that no child, probably in my lifetime, will be able to do the things that I was able to do. I will never forget being 6 or 7 years old. I grew up in New Jersey. You know, being put on a bike and riding 6 miles away to play football with a bunch of other 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds unsupervised for the entire day. You know, nowadays that's child neglect, and you might find yourself in prison doing something like that. But the world was a different place back then. And, you know, I blame our legislators for that. And I could go into why and for what reasons and specifically and all the rest of that. But that would just be a giant waste of time. That, yes, what I see hitting home, and it's that. It's that our kids are never going to have they're never going to see the America that we saw. Even if we can somehow put the brakes on the system and keep things, because when was the last time, if ever, there was a change for the better, you know, where all of a sudden, you know, regulations came down and stayed down, or a price that went up, and all of a sudden the cost of goods went down, and business owners said, you know what, you know, I don't need that extra profit, so I'm going to go ahead and lower the price. Temporarily, sure, you know, but over time, it's just, especially, it's impossible now that they've added the entitlement of Obamacare. I mean, the more entitlements they get, has any entitlement ever been removed? Maybe that's the word I was grasping for, was entitlement. You know, we keep adding them like they're going out of style, and they're never going away. So there's no chance that it'll ever go. The best we can hope for is to arrest the process and keep things where they're at today. And it pales in comparison to the life that I had growing up. And it just, it kills me. So I, like I said, a great personal sacrifice. I've got $200,000 invested in this process to fight for kids I don't have. But I think it's that important. I mentioned the flag in the classroom. That's a hot button of mine. Not on my watch. I will not go to my grave wondering if this mouth of mine could have done something to make sure that flag stays up in every single classroom, whether it offends an illegal alien or not. If it offends you that much, then please make sure that the checks that have it on there, you know, don't get cashed. How about that? You know, people have no problem.
It's definitely going to get worse.
They have
before
a real problem
better
with that flag. That does not work for me. If you're going to cash my nation's paycheck with my tax dollars, then you're going to look at my nation's flag. This is the way it's going to be. And it's crazy how, you know, we evolve as we get older. Because, you know, I was always the kid that you didn't want your kids playing with. You know, a true troublemaker. And I guess seeing these things disappear, it's gut-wrenching. And what's even more gut-wrenching is they don't know the kids today. They don't know what they don't know.
I've noticed that. I noticed in 20 years, well, not just 20 years, but even when I was in high school 20 years ago, that political correctness is already creeping in fairly heavily. And literally between the class before me and the class after me, there was already a major shift that was happening at that time in the early 90s. I mean, it's almost happened as much as when grunge just literally killed and rearranged pop music overnight. It killed killed hair metal for the most part, because it was starting to get pretty – it was getting cookie cutter to begin with. But, you know, and I've often said is that Nirvana is the only band that saved and destroyed pop music at the same time, because it put on display how poorly what had become. But in the process, by going back to basics and becoming more primal with a punk bass, that showed where it needed to go to get started again. And I think that was a major factor to get it back off the ground. And I think it's done a fantastic job doing that. And, of course, the sacrificial lamb was Cobain himself. But you know, pop music is finally starting to come back up off the dregs again, and you're starting to get some good talent. It's just some good overall music like it was in the 80s, where there's just a lot of different styles. A lot of good stuff. It's not overproduced. It's not cookie cutter as much as it was in the 90s and the 2000s. So I think in some regards, it's almost the same in politics, because libertarian movement is starting to grow in leaps and bounds thanks to the Ron Paul Revolution. With the Libertarian Party being a little more active and starting to win more local races, we're starting to see a lot more blogs and people doing vlogs and speaking their minds more now than ever before thanks to the freedom of the Internet. But at the same time, we're starting to see the government in the process of not only wanting to have an Internet kill switch like they pulled over in Tanzania, they're trying to start an Internet, too, where it almost takes us back 20 years, where when you had to pay large fees just to get on the Internet for a short amount of time. And that's one way on how that's how they control content.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, not just you having your website clearly shows that you speak in your mind. You obviously are building an audience, so people are receptive to what you have to say. And all I can say is stay on it, brother, because obviously, you may fall into a gold mine and not even realize it. I mean, look how long it took Joseph Ferrer to build World Net Daily. I mean, it took him a few years, but once he got it rolling, man, it got a life of its own.
I saw somewhere, one of my readers had sent me something that showed world rankings for blogs. And I don't care enough to remember exactly how it was situated, but out of X million, I was ranked 28,000th or something like that, which, and I don't know if it was fastest growing or overall, or I don't know how they even measured it, but there's no question that I'm growing like a weed. I also wonder how long I'm going to stay up. I'm currently, at least on Facebook anyway, I am on suspension from posting anywhere other than my own site, which I'm not really sure where that came from. I just got a notice in my inbox one day that said you are no longer able to post anywhere but your site until, I think there's only a couple more days left on my suspension. But riddle me this. This will probably raise an eyebrow or two with a couple folks out there. I have gotten so many emails from people saying I am permanently banned from Facebook because I have reposted your stories.
Oh.
Now.
Funny, I just posted one a few minutes ago.
riddle me this. If you're Facebook, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say somewhere between 30 and 45 people that have been permanently banned. I don't want to discourage people from reposting my stuff because there's a reason. I mean, that's all the more reason to repost it. But if they know where it's coming from, why are they letting the head of the snake continue to post? I would ask you. I have an answer. What I believe the answer to be. I don't know, how familiar you are with the fusion centers in Ohio. You guys have some of the worst ones.
Oh yes,
but I have no doubt that I'm on radar.
At Toledo.
I have absolutely no doubt that I'm on radar, and I believe that the only reason that I am still up is because they want to know what it is that I know. I have forecasted almost everything that has happened to a T, usually 6 months to a year in advance. At the same time, people are telling me that I'm crazy and I need to put my tinfoil hat on. Usually about a year later, if I wanted to, I could send him an email and say, I told you so. I can't think of any places I've been wrong. The only places I haven't been right are things that haven't happened yet. So I truly believe that the powers that be want to know what it is that I know and what it is that I'm posting, because I can't figure out why else you wouldn't just cut the head of the snake off and shut me up permanently. Instead, you're just cutting off the little tentacles, the people that are reposting. So maybe someday I'll have an answer to that as I go to bed in my little FEMA camp with my FEMA coffin out front waiting for me to get shipped off in. But until then, I will wonder, why do they continue to let me to post? Interesting thing to ponder.
You'd be feeling like, if somebody didn't have any kids out there, because you'd be feeling like Harry Dean Stanton in Red Dawn's like, avenge me, boys! Avenge me!
I hope we never come to that, but, I'm not scared of it, of things going that way. I'm just so not wired that way to be violent,
yeah,
or anything of that sort. But and never did I dream that I would be cut from the cloth that is so this way, that these rights are that important and that I am willing to die. I've quoted several times in one of my posts that went around a couple thousand times last week, right when Obama said that he was going to rewrite the immigration laws. And I said, I'm not really sure why this hasn't been reposted 100,000 times yet. Why has it only been reposted 2,000 or 3,000 times? I don't know. Because our founders, they pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And, to that I would pledge that I'm in this for the long haul. I certainly don't want to get blown to pieces, but I can assure you I'd have no problem standing on the front lines and being that guy either.
Well, let me ask you this. Here's a story that I posted yesterday from the CCC. Washington and Lee University wants to desecrating Robert E. Lee's grave. You got like six black people, or I don't even think they're even students of the university, are basically whining and bitching to take down some of the Confederate memorabilia that's around the grave because they found it offensive. It's like, wait a minute, hold on. It defeats the whole purpose. Yeah, it defeats the whole purpose because of the fact that it's no. What's next? You're going to say that Revolutionary War graves that may feature the Betsy Ross flag should be chiseled off their headstones? I mean, there's a similar situation over in Austria, I think it was, where they've got a high-ranking Nazi SS officer who's been there for obviously many years, and they're wanting to chisel out the swastika that's on the gravestone. It's like, dude, you need to know the importance of the gravestone. I mean, exactly. You can't just selectively edit history and hope that no one figures out what it is. Well, I mean, you found in, what was it, I don't know if it was in Pompeii or some other Roman city that they had unearthed. But it may have been underneath the palace where Nero's palace once stood. They actually found a room that had, probably one of the Roman imperial families up there. And one particular face was just completely wiped out. And it was clearly obvious that they were trying to eradicate all parts of history on this particular individual and because they didn't want people to know who he was. So if they could do something like that, then you'd totally destroy for the ages the full story of what the hell happened.
Not on my watch. You know, that's the kind of thing that I will stand for. You know, where did I get that? I don't know. Like I said, I wasn't born with it. I was never wired that way. I was always wired for trouble. But that's how I'm wired today. Is that stuff worth fighting for? Yeah. Is it worth dying for? God, I hope I don't have to. I hope it doesn't come that far. But you know, I certainly wouldn't shy away from it. I mean, at some point, you need to take a principle. I'll speak for myself. At some point, I needed to get right and make a principled stand and know that, you know, when my time comes, that that I go with a clear conscience, that I didn't sell out, that I didn't, that I didn't just follow orders. Nazis followed orders. You know, I don't follow orders. I live a principled life and will continue to do so, and if something, you know, violates those principles, then I'll be damned if I'm not going to stand up for them. And I cringe sometimes with some of the things that I write, because I do have family that get my, you know, on my actual website, not the Facebook site, on the site itself, thelastgreatstand.com, you can sign up for the newsletter. Mm-hmm. Anytime I post a post, you get a copy of it via email. And so I know that a lot of family members get them, and I cringe sometimes when I know family's getting them. Especially, you know, my mother's getting them or whatnot, because I would be that guy out on the front line. Because somebody has
to. So what is all the best ways to view your thoughts online, your website, your Twitter, and your Facebook?
I'm going to give a multi-tiered answer here. I would prefer that nobody ever looked at my Twitter or Facebook page. They exist only because of today's instant gratification, self-inflicted ADD that everybody seems to do to themselves. I'm constantly berating my audience about being headline readers or sharing pictures. But I've also learned what I need to do to get people to read. So a lot of times what I'll do is I will put two pictures up that I know will get attention, and then right after that, you know, a really important article. And I use the pictures to grab your attention
And then I hope, you know, that some of you will grab the proportions. It's got to block, you know, who clicks on what. It's disgusting. You know, if 100,000 people will click on a picture and 10 will click on an article, 10,000 that is. So I would prefer people just went straight to my blog because I want to educate people. If you're interested in pictures, then I don't want you following me. Go follow somebody else. I have no need for you.
That's true.
And you have no need for me, quite frankly. I will be the first to just lay into somebody on my site. I do it all the time. If somebody comments, you know, below a post that literally is the entire topic of the entire thing, they obviously haven't read it, I will just blast them into the next week. You know, great headline reading. You know, that's how we got Barack Obama as our president. By people reading headlines, by people seeking sound bites, by bumper stickers, T-shirts, and, you know, fancy little logos that you can stick on your notebooks at school. That's how we got this schmuck. You do not get educated with knowledge, and knowledge is the only way that we're going to grow. You can't teach somebody a logo. You can teach somebody the knowledge that you have about the petrodollar. You can teach somebody the knowledge that you have about the Constitution of the United States and about their rights. You can't teach a picture. You know, it could be entertaining, but I don't want you sharing the damn picture. You know, don't share the picture. Share the article. So there's my soapbox, and I'll get off that. Anyone who follows me will see that I do that quite a bit. Some days I get really hot when I post something of just grave importance, and it gets completely ignored for all the cool pictures that I post. So there's my, as far as the web addresses, I'm not sure, maybe you have a link to those on your site or not. It's The Last Great Stand, just like it sounds, is the main blog site, and then that has links to my YouTube channel. It has links to Twitter. It's got links to Facebook, so I would just use that as the main one to get to everything. And that name, The Last Great Stand, I think you asked me when we first started, where did that come from? And it comes from one of the greats, and a guy who is surely missed today, Ronald Reagan, and a saying from his speech entitled A Time for Choosing, when he says, if we lose freedom here, there's no place left to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. And I would have named it The Last Stand, but it was already taken. So.
Yeah, he was referring to a Cuban exile who escaped Castro and came to the United States and said, at least I had some place to go to. If we, which his story says it all, because if we lose freedom, this is the last great stand on earth. And then that's exactly what he said in that speech, which I recommend everybody download, which you can get off of AmericanRhetoric.com. You can download
the whole speech.
The whole speech to me is the basis of conservatism. I mean, that and Goldwater's acceptance speech of 64 at the same time. You put the two of them together, I mean, I don't agree with some of Goldwater's policies regarding NATO, but just generally speaking, you listen to most of the stuff in that speech, man, it's definitely worth a listen. I mean, and as well as the famous closing line the famous closing line where extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, and moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. And some people say that's actually a quote from maybe Cicero, even Plato. They haven't really narrowed it down.
No, those are two unbelievable speeches, and you know, it's pretty tough to say to somebody, you know, why don't you watch this 20-minute political speech? It's gonna be, you just can't even imagine how awesome it's gonna be. I mean, even the guy who loves politics, like myself, is gonna say, you know, no thanks. I'd rather do something else. But I mean, those are truly, you know, Picasso style speeches. Both of them, they're just works of art. From a true artist. I mean, he was definitely a phenomenal patriot and sorely missed in today's times.
Yeah, he's a complete antithesis of a Barack Obama, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No,
that's great. All right, brother, thank you for coming on the St. Thomas Show. It was a great pleasure coming across the website, seeing the great articles.
So
I recommend everybody copy and paste all these links to your respective pages and your profiles to get the information out there, because not only does he have some really great content, but a lot of it's original thought. And we definitely need to promote as much originality as possible so we can have different points of view on the same topic so we can really understand an issue for what it is. So Last Voice of Reason, thanks again for coming on the show. I'm looking forward to talking to you again soon, my friend.
Sounds great, Sonny. I appreciate the honor. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good night. All right, there goes Last Voice of Reason. Again, his website is thelastgreatstand.com. You can follow him on Facebook as well as his respective Twitter profile and be able to get some really good, high-quality information and be able to spread the word on that very topic. So there's a lot of good stuff out there. You just got to take the time to find it. That's one thing I try to do on my show is try to find people that actually have something to say. And arguably I can say that's why I don't take a lot of calls, because, in fact, I want my guests to kind of speak for themselves. Some of them are a little bit more talkers than others. Some of them may have a really hot issue they want to really focus in on. Others have a general issue that they cover and have a lot of examples of that issue, such as Lori Hanrahan, who was trying to expose a lot of the corruption about child porn and all sorts of other crazy shenanigans that's going on that she kind of fell into because of the system betrayed her and stole her daughter from her and gave her to a sick, twisted pedophile, which is her ex-husband. So it turned her into an advocate, and she's clearly seen over and over again some of the stuff that's going on out there. So she's got some good YouTube videos for various appearances, especially through Canadian television. And I've forwarded some of them recently on the St. Thomas Show page as well as the Spring Road Tea Party page. So definitely look up Lori Hanrahan's Twitter account. And occasionally she does have some links to some of her videos. And if not, I would try to recycle them periodically so that way you have a chance to view them and hear her comments. Now, when it comes to the stuff on the issues of the our protectors that are turning into our predators, such as law enforcement, NASA, military, federal government officials, things of that nature, they clearly get caught constantly of getting caught literally with their pants down or doing something or watching a bunch of smut with kids. Even some of them to the point where they got snuff films with toddlers or infants as young as 3 years old or even 3 months old. I mean, it's some sick stuff out there that she clearly showcases and really has a passion on trying to expose, as also she works on her her new book, Child Pornation, which hopefully will come out this year, if not hopefully by the beginning of next year. Definitely look forward to having her on a regular basis so you can update us on what's going on. So she's an individual in particular that I have a great deal of respect for. And again, I just happened to come across her on Twitter one day as I was surfing and retweeting. So definitely recommend that you retweet sites that you think have something to say, because other people such as me who do surf periodically come across these, just like I come across the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Again, those are going to be one of our first guests next week is Pete Kennedy from farmtoconsumer.org, which is a legal defense fund for the raw dairy milk farmer and organic farmer. So he's going to be on the 9 o'clock hour. The 10 o'clock hour, we're going to have another attorney, Orly Tates, who is actually an immigrant, I do believe, from Russia, and strived to come to this country and become an attorney, do the best thing. And she has many evidence over and over again that Barry Sotoro, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama II, is not who he says he is. He's clearly fraudulent and an illegal alien. And that brings up the question again, how much longer is it going to take before we get this usurper out of our house? He needs to go. Now the story's going on that Michelle might actually be Michael, which explains that kind of muscular physique that she, he, it, whatever the case may be, has. She, he, it, yeah, shit. This is just shorten it to shit. That she may be a trainee, and that Obama himself is actually gay And it could very well be because of some of the stories you hear about people knew him when he was younger, said that not only did they have a – he obviously had a coke habit, which especially during high school years, the kid obviously didn't – he's never had a job in his life. How in the hell is he able to have a coke habit, especially living in Hawaii? Well, there's obviously he was hanging around a lot of fairly rich white guys who more than likely are probably Bohemian Grovers, and that you know, basically giving it to him up the ass while he's snorting a couple lines or two. So I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that's going on out there. I mean, when you know people that do drugs, they'll do anything to get their fix, and they don't give a damn if they got a commodity that they can cash in on. They'll more definitely use that to get their fix. That's for sure. So, anyways, finishing up, we were talking about the Warren County GOP the other day. We looked at a couple different things. One of the resolutions that we're looking at that we tabled is the resolution basically denouncing the shenanigans that the Cochran campaign did in Mississippi. And hang on, I'm just fixing something here. And so those are the type of tactics that we want to denounce, some of the stuff that they're doing. We don't want here in the great sovereign state of Ohio, especially since we decide presidents. We've had 8 presidents from Ohio, 7 are Republicans. The first one was a Whig, William Henry Harrison. And now it looks like the RNC is definitely pretty much got Cleveland locked down for their convention in 2016. But it's interesting enough is, how are the Democrats going to be allowed to have their convention in Columbus? I think having it in Ohio, they shouldn't have both parties have their conventions close to each other in the same state. I don't know. Is there a precedent that this has been done before? But I think that's bunk. And it clearly shows you that Republicans must have their game on in some regard because the Democrats are trying to duplicate it in some way. So with Ohio being a major swing state, and supposing we have a Republican governor who's putting us on a fiscal path, which is that in some ways a lie in of itself, even though Cleveland is having a rejuvenation right now, I think it's pretty obvious that there's other designs going on here. But the bottom line is we have to make sure that we hold our elected representatives accountable, no matter what level that they're on, even if they're on a non-paying position, such as Central Committee or State Central Committee or whatever the case may be, because that's one thing I'm going to go after McHugh on. He has no presence on the web hardly at all. He has no intentions of letting his constituents know what's going on there. Whether he's been allowed to or directed to or not does not matter. You're elected by the public to go in there and take care of business. Now, just like I said before, my pledge is I will be as transparent as possible, not the Barack Obama kind, the Sonny Thomas kind, where I will give you regular updates on what the hell is going on, just like Ron Paul does. He does regular blogs and tries to let you know what's happening. So these are things we definitely need to look at and the whole representative is accountable and not wait till they put out a weekly newsletter, which is bogus and bunk like Shannon Jones often puts out. I've literally seen 2 or 3 newsletters where she contradicts herself by she's promoting one issue and denigrating another one when actually they bounce off each other. Or one can't support the other without the other's financial mechanics. So, I mean, sometimes I really wonder what the hell her confidence level is. Does she really understand what the hell is going on? Or is she practicing classic Delphi tactics and using simply subversion of the truth to you know, just make you think you won't even detect what the hell's going on. So these are questions we need to seriously ask ourselves and start raising up some serious hell about because it's unacceptable on multiple levels. So anyways, okay, just giving you some quick updates here. I'm actually getting ready to start editing a video I shot at the Franklin Library I mentioned back in March called The Right to Write, and it's by Ann Bain. And she's in Carlisle, Ohio, and she did a little presentation on how to do classical ways of handwriting and calligraphy, and I shot it two different, slightly different camera angles there in the community room at the Springboro Library, and I'm going to start editing next week, and
Shortly afterwards, I'm going to shoot some footage at her home studio so you can see some of the artifacts she has, of the way that they used to teach people how to write, especially if they're left-handed, because it's a different angle than a right hand, and basically it's designed so it looks like a right-handed angle when you actually write. Because the kids these days, since it's no longer forced calligraphy, cannot write. I have an ex-girlfriend whose oldest child writes in cursive, but her younger two, the middle and the young one, do not. They both write in print, and they're only, they're all a year apart. So you see quickly at that particular level what happened, and it makes you wonder what the hell is going on. So definite issue that needs to be looked into, and we were trying to push for that in Springboro schools to make calligraphy a requirement again, but unfortunately we ran out of time with our conservative majority to make that implemented and make it work. Now with that Marxist group that we have in upper now with Malone, Stuckey, and Anderson, it's clearly obvious that nothing's going to get done that's going to matter, except they're going to spend. They're already talking about spending having to get a loan for $5 million to redo all the roofs in the school system, when only two of them were already budgeted for anyway, needing some repair. And now that, but the company that they're contracting with has been busted for using substandard materials at premium rates. So they're charging you for good stuff and using crap leftover shit that you pick up at Home Depot instead of going to a quality place. So this is the type of stuff that we got going on here. So in some ways, God, I wish Kelly Coles would have ran again, because we would have had a good solid 8 years of a school system that actually would have been top of its class and would be leading to her instead of mixing with it and following it. So I think it sucks. Bigger shit. We need to start asking some questions. So I recommend the people of Springboro start getting up to the school board meetings and start listening in. Even if you don't understand it, get the agenda. Go to a couple meetings and just get a groove on it. Go get yourself an Idiot's Guide to Robert's Rules. There's a couple of videos online that you can understand basic Robert's Rules, which is the standard practice for any type of public elected body, whether it be school board, city council, or state and senate, that they have Robert's Rules, which basically has a complete ordered structure so everybody gets a chance to say what they got to say and go through a motion and have different ways to work with it or counter it and make it an understandable discussion and debate. So these are the basic things that we need to make sure we understand, or we're doomed to repeat the same failures we did before. So that's definitely a problem. So I tell people all the time, go to local school board meetings and find out what the hell is going on, because you know what? You may not like what you see one day, and you become that parent that stands up and be counted and runs for school board. And I really think you should start looking into that and really have a good conservative base. And look at the different groups that may be already operating in your area, whether they left or right wing, and know the difference. Know the key words to distinguish between the two, because some are a little more clandestine, try to look centrist when they're totally left wing. So those are things that you have to be aware of, that's for sure. Okay, we're going to finish up and get ready to roll here. So I'm going to finish up with a couple tunes and get jamming here, because I've had a long day, especially that drive coming back from Columbus on the Common Core thing. So it was definitely was a lot of information to absorb. I know the gentleman that recorded it. I'm looking forward to not only viewing it again myself, so especially the last speaker. She was dead on, and I really absorbed a lot of her information, but I wanted to go through it a second and third time, so it's basically gospel. And hoping to put it on cable access soon, so that way other people could see this presentation as well. So that's definitely a must and something we need to make sure people have available and to be educated on the issue of Common Core, what it is and what it isn't. So, again, that goes without saying. All right, so we're going to go ahead and dial it down. We'll probably, I'm going to think we'll spend about two songs here, get everything copacetic and down the road. So... I'm going to finish up with Eric Girardi, That Hole, from his new album, Everybody's Waiting. And
Maybe we'll finish it up with Darren J. Moore's Prognosis Psychosis, which is a local artist who I interviewed here recently. And we'll definitely check that out. So check out websites, sunnythomas.com, springboardteaparty.com or .org, cfccohio.org, the HMD Music Resource Guide, thehmd.com, and you're listening to us on blogtalkradio.com/truthemerges or on 106.9 FM in the Springboro area on Borough Radio. So it's Lance Mahath, and we'll definitely check you out. Start off with a little Eric Girardi.
It's a House of Blues break. We'll be right back.
information on him, go to www.ericgirardi.com. Next is Darren J. Moore from Dayton area band Legacy. This is one of his side projects he did, and this is a track called Prognosis Psychosis.
Thank you.